The following program, Normal Show Live, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate for the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate or encourage any illegal activity and advise all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws by visiting normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers of Normal Show Live are their own and do not necessarily reflect the philosophy and policies of Normal. Listener discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents... Normal Show Live! Marijuana Nation! Now, here's your host, Normal's Outreach Coordinator... Belleville.
Good afternoon, tokers and tokettes. It is Thursday, March 24th, 2011, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Thanks for joining us for this next hour of news talk, interviews, information, music, comedy, and more by, for, and about the cannabis community. We're coming to you live from beautiful Rolla J Studios in Potland, Oregon, where spring has sprung. We are having a good time here. Also joining us here in the studio, the man who makes all the electronics happen, Ganja John.
How you doing, Russ?
I'm doing fantastic. We got Coleco, the intern, in the house as well, taking care of the Twitter duties today.
Yes.
So things are happening, and the Normal Network is off the hook. People are really responding well to it. They're loving the variety. They're loving hearing from people all around this great country of ours that are fighting for an end of adult marijuana prohibition. So check out those shows, Normal Networks, on 24/7. You turn on live.normal.org, you're going to hear something, and you're going to learn something about marijuana in this country. Also joining us from Astoria, Oregon, is the lovely Cannabis Carrie.
Hey, guys. I got to get an app for my phone so I can listen to that while I'm out and about.
Yeah.
All these great programs.
We were telling folks, too, Coleco just found it, and John mentioned it to him, mm-hmm. the Android app for StickAm is quite good. You can see the chat, and you can watch the show and hear the show.
Unfortunately, it does crash every time you enter the chat.
Oh, it does?
Try and actually chat on your phone, but you can listen to it.
How about iPhone? They got an app for iPhone?
They do have an app for iPhone as well, and you can check it out in the iTunes Marketplace.
Excellent. Check that out. You can catch the Normal Network 24/7 weekdays, but the podcasts are coming in so quick now that I think we'll be filling up the weekends too. So we're going to have plenty of material. So look forward to that coming up later on the network. Of course, we've got some great shows for you, including let's see here, who's going to be up here? Oh, the new John Doe Radio, of course, and then Hollywood Hemptress Hour and Hotbox Podcast are on for today on Thursday, as well as all the other great shows on today's show here, Normal Show Live. It's a Thursday. It's the fourth Thursday of the month, and that means cops say legalize drugs. We got Michael Hansen from LEAP coming in to join us. He's a former Border Patrol officer and county sheriff. And then at the end of the show, a little rant. What has Normal done for you lately? I'm responding to some haters out there in cyberspace. And of course, today is John Doe Radio's Groovin' Thursday as far as the Daily Toker tunes go. We'll get that at 20 after the hour. But first, we always start with our hemp headlines. What's in the news, Carrie?
Well, today we could call it Business Thursday. We're going to start off with a story about a very large company threatening the city of Phoenix over a dispensary. Plus, you can get out your calculators. Russ, put a smile on your face because we've got a bunch of numbers coming to you. First, about the health of the cannabis industry, and then some more numbers coming to you about the health of the DEA industry. All that on today's Hemp Headlines.
All right. Sounds good. Check it out. And you can catch these stories at Carrie's blog at CannabisFantastic.com, as well as our blog, stash.normal.org. Get all the information you need, including the full lineup for the Normal Network, by clicking on the Normal Network up there in the header. We're right back after this.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
In today's busy world, we're inundated by advertising for all types of pharmaceuticals that come with a laundry list of potential side effects. Shouldn't you have better medical choices? Natural alternatives to pills pushed by Big Pharma? At Alternative Medical Choices, you could choose natural, safe, and effective alternative therapies that are right for your budget without nasty side effects. Cannabis, or marijuana, has been a legal medicine in the Pacific Northwest since 1998. Our doctors will help determine your qualifications for a medical marijuana recommendation in Oregon, no matter where you live. Our massage therapist will ease your aches and stress with soothing hemp seed oil or cannabis-infused massage salves. We also offer acupuncture, Reiki, and other alternative health therapies. Call Alternative Medical Choices in Portland, Oregon at 503-288-5579 or visit our website at www.altmedchoices.com. We specialize in out-of-state recommendations. That's www.altmedchoices.com or call 503-288-5579.
Normal National Conference 2011, Denver, Colorado, April 21st through 23rd.
I'm not a crook.
When President Nixon declared war on marijuana smokers, Normal was founded by a young lawyer named Keith Strupp. And now, in our 40th year, Normal is coming of age as states begin discussing outright marijuana legalization.
Entirely legitimate topic for debate.
Join us in Denver, Colorado, the day after 420 for our 40th annual National Conference. You'll learn about marijuana law, cannabis science, and the grassroots activism necessary to end prohibition. Set in the Mile High City, America's cannabis capital. Special guests include medical marijuana pioneer and Harvard Emeritus Dr. Lester Grinspoon, U.S. Congressman Jared Polis, and Normal founder Keith Strupp. Normal National Conference 2011, coming of age in Denver, Colorado, April 21st through 23rd. It's the true Rocky Mountain High.
Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's Normal News with Cannabis Carrie.
Karsten Manufacturing, a Phoenix, Arizona golf maker that has been in the North Phoenix area for 45 years, has threatened to move their plant because of a proposed medical marijuana dispensary in the area. In Phoenix, golf is played year-round in one of the largest industries in the area. It's known worldwide as Ping Golf Products. The family-owned company's patriarch is the only golf club manufacturer to be inducted into the World Golf Hall of Fame. Since Karsten Solheim passed away in 2000, the company is now run by his sons. The Arizona Republic is reporting that the company is vehemently opposed to a medical marijuana facility just one block south of their headquarters. Karsten Manufacturing gives free tours of their facilities and has their golf celebrity clients come in for visits and fittings. They say that the city has already allowed the neighborhood to be in a deteriorated state. There are two strip clubs already, and they feel that a marijuana distribution store will make the neighborhood look even worse. Last week, Phoenix held the first use permit hearings for medical marijuana dispensary locations. Ping legal representative Stephen Earle attended and objected to an applicant who does want to locate their business about a half a mile away on another street. Earle told the hearing officer that Ping has been working out the details to a $170 million renovation project at their headquarters, but now they might use that money to look into relocating the company if the city doesn't do more to improve the neighborhood. Ping has not announced, or had not announced, its renovation plans publicly before the hearing. Earle said that the company often brings in golf teams from around the world for custom fittings, including many younger golfers. He said bringing them into a bad neighborhood reflects poorly on the company. He said their neighbors already include a striptease club, a lingerie store, and a hemp product store will be opening in the area in April. Earle told the board that the neighborhood has become a hotbed of deleterious uses. The use permit for the dispensary was granted despite Ping's opposition, but a city official was quoted by saying that they will do whatever they need to keep Ping happy. The company employs 800 to 1,000 people, depending on the season. Ping legal spokesman Earle told the Republic after the hearing that moving the company is now an option that has to be on the table. Deputy City Manager David Creator said that the city will do all it can to keep them happy with the iconic product that has the design of the golf club that's manufactured in Phoenix. He said the city should do everything they can to help them out. He said that Ping generates wealth and could relocate anywhere, unlike most of the other businesses in the area. To receive permits, applicants must meet a variety of city rules, including required distances from schools, churches, parks, and homes. And then after obtaining their city permits, applicants must now go to the Arizona Department of Health Services for licensing, a process that begins May 1st.
Wow. You know, when the discrimination and prejudice is so blatant like that, it's really amazing to me. I mean, did anyone stop to think to ask the strip clubs what they thought about having an uptight white man sport located so close to them? Look at this. This cuts both ways here. Ping Golf, you do not get to write into law that medical marijuana dispensaries have to be 1,000 feet away from your precious golf club manufacturing. My God, here. Saying that this would be, bad influence. I mean, the discrimination and prejudice is so blatant that if it were any other group that they were discriminating against, there'd be an outcry. I mean, first of all, I don't think Ping Golf would be upset if a CVS or a Rite Aid set up a business there to distribute medicine near their precious little golf club manufacturing. Imagine if they'd said, if they'd complained about someone wanting to open up, say, I don't know, a kosher deli or a Roscoe's Chicken and Waffles or a mosque or something like that, right? There'd be huge outcry on that kind of discrimination. But when it's medical marijuana patients, the assumption here is that somehow they're filthy and lowlife and akin to strip clubs and lingerie stores as far as being a blight on the neighborhood. Give me a break. Ping Golf, you know, they ought to just let you go. There's going to be so much business from medical marijuana, you just watch, coming up here in Arizona, that your contribution to the economy will pale in comparison. This is an outrage, and I call on all people, and not that I really know anybody that golfs that much, but if you're using Ping products, write to that manufacturer and tell them you will not support them if they're going to be so discriminatory against sick and disabled people.
And a report that was all over cannabis news sites yesterday was the state of medical marijuana markets for 2011. The Private Financial Analysis Report is a product of Sea Changes Strategy, LLC, an independent financial analysis firm that specializes in new and unique markets. Their in-depth report says that the sales of medical marijuana nationwide will top $1.7 billion this year. Much was made of that number, with dozens of news sites comparing them to Pfizer's sales of Viagra. Viagra comes in close to legal medical marijuana at $1.9 billion sales annually. The report estimates that nearly 25 million people are eligible to receive a recommendation and then purchase medical marijuana legally under state law, and that report finds that about 730,000 people do so. They say a thriving medical marijuana market exists in 7 of the states that allow medical marijuana, and predict that 5 more states will move to make selling medical marijuana easier in the next year. They predict that current marijuana markets will double in the next 5 years, driven by the rise in the number of legal patients and the states that will adopt regulation license processes. The market analysis report offers a critical and independent analysis for anyone looking to participate in the new growth industry of cannabis. It is offered in a 92-page hardbound report with glossy data sheets, 15 slide market PowerPoints for investment and business meetings, and can be purchased for the affordable, price of $1,150.
Wow. Okay. And remember, this medical marijuana market, they're just talking about the market of people who are legally able to get medical marijuana after they've gotten a recommendation from a legal dispensary in just a few states, right? Compared to the entire nationwide market for Viagra. And it's still just about the same. And kind of, interesting too, that in both cases, we're talking about drugs that have an amazing medical benefit. But a lot of people are using them recreationally, too. Let's not kid ourselves here. I know when I went to my doctor last time, it was almost as if she was pushing the Viagra on me. You know, if you want Viagra, I can get you Viagra. Well, gee, I didn't say anything about sex or anything like that, but hell, if you're giving them away, I'll take them. Sure, why not, right? This is what happens commonly in pharmaceutical markets, is you get these sample packs, the pharmaceutical reps that'll come into the doctors and wine and dine them, take them to dinner, give them all this free stuff to give away. And yet still, with all of that, with all the marketing they got and the people, you know, the couples watching sunsets while they sit in empty bathtubs, all of that marketing, they still are about the same level of market as an extremely restricted, very limited clientele medical marijuana market that's only occurring in just a handful of states. I'm telling you, folks, marijuana is the market, and this is what's killing the pharmaceutical industry. They can see these numbers just as well as we can, and they know the more legal marijuana that's out there, especially if it's legal for all the healthy people, they will see their profits, their share on these drugs, drop precipitously. Medical marijuana patients we know are taking one-half to one-third the opiate drugs they were taking before using medical marijuana. And think about all, well, even think about Viagra. I know a lot of people that would rather use cannabis for that purpose than use Viagra, let me tell you. So, again, kudos to the medical marijuana market, and it's good to see these numbers. And to unfortunately end this on a pun, we can only hope that they'll continue to go up. Oh, no. Have we lost Cannabis Carrie on the line there? Carrie, are you still with us?
I think we may have lost her.
I think we may have lost Cannabis Carrie. And I know what she was coming up with. The next story had to do with the numbers on the DEA and their plant raids. It's the top numbers that we've ever seen, you know, the most plants ever raided. And it's something like a million plants that they've taken. Are you there now, Carrie? No, on our side? Okay, we must have some sort of problem going on our side. But yeah, these the latest seizure numbers from the DEA, again, they're crowing about these numbers that they've come with so many plants that they've seized. But everyone knows that what they come through on these seizures is merely 10% of what's coming out in the market. And no matter how much marijuana they manage to seize year after year after year, it always ends up that we still have lower prices and more supply than we had the previous year. So it's clear that this interdiction effort being to undertaken by the federal government and state governments, like in California, the campaign against marijuana planting. It's clear that these things aren't working, that we are continuing to get the access that we want. We just tried to get Carrie back on the line. Let's see if she's there.
Am I here?
You are here, Carrie.
Can you hear me?
Okay. Go ahead with your story.
I know that you started. Let me try to skip through mine a little bit. The annual report from the DEA about the state of the illegal marijuana eradication efforts was released last week, and again, they have some big numbers. The data is collected by the DEA in conjunction with the Domestic Cannabis Eradication and Suppression Program. It's a joint federal and state effort where the DEA contributes the funding, training, equipment, investigation resources, and aircraft resources to the states to try to eradicate domestically cultivated marijuana. So last year, 2010, the DEA agents uprooted 10,329,185 plants. Most of that was concentrated in California, where 7,392,000 of those plants were seized and destroyed. Now, in comparison, the second and third largest numbers of plants seized were West Virginia, where they nabbed 420,000 plants, and Kentucky, where they managed to pull 330,000 plants. Now, out of the 85,926 pounds of processed and usable marijuana seized, California accounted for 52,928 pounds of it. And out of the 9,687 people arrested, 1,500 were arrested from the Golden State. Now, those numbers are way up in the record books. In 2007, another record year, the feds only were able to account for 4,951,000 of the plants seized. And, of course, these numbers are only part of a much larger story. They do not include any border busts or busts involving marijuana suspected of being imported to the U.S. from other countries like Canada and Mexico. And the numbers do not include any plants or cannabis seizures by state law enforcement, like Russ mentioned, CAMP. CAMP scored 572,680 plants just in Mendocino County, California alone. So that number is more than the DEA found in the rest of the 49 states combined. If you add CAMP's plant seizures with the DEA seizures just for California, that's over 11,712,000 plants by just those two programs. The average comment by law enforcement, Russ mentioned, that they only get about 10%. That means that over 100 million marijuana plants are grown in California, and those are just the illegal plants. Now, according to Stephen Gutwillig, the California director of the Drug Policy Alliance, it's all fuzzy math. He told the San Francisco Weekly that it is a cycle that the DEA engages in to claim every year to have seized more, eradicated more than the year before, yet the price and availability remain unchanged. He said the programs are spending great amount of tax dollars for giving federal law enforcement officers helicopter rides and gardening experience. Now, we are not sure how much money the DEA is spending on their eradication efforts. According to Special Agent Casey McEnroy, a spokesman for the California DEA office, they will not be releasing their budget figures. Now, also interesting to note, while the outdoor seizures of marijuana plants has grown steadily, indoor seizures are on the decline. They dropped from 182,000 plants in 2008 to 153,000 in 2010.
Mm-hmm. And some other things to remember about these numbers. A plant to them is anything from a seedling to an 8-foot-tall bush, right? So a lot of times they'll raid a clone factory and pull up 200 little tiny seedlings and go, oh, we eradicated $3 million worth of marijuana off the market. No, you eradicated a whole bunch of little seedlings. And for a long time, we would find that most of what they were eradicating was ditchweed. They used to have a category, you know, a column number in that report for ditchweed. They stopped doing that in the mid-2000s when us at Normal kept pointing out that most of what they were seizing was hemp that nobody would smoke in the first place. These numbers, again, just like Carrie said, it's just a dog and pony show to try to justify their bloated budgets and to try to convince the American people that they're actually succeeding at something when everybody knows people are smoking pot, they've always smoked pot, and they will continue to smoke pot.
Speaking of continuing to smoke pot, it's 420 on the East Coast.
We've got some special experiments to do with our nanograms per milliliter.
Yes.
We're going to see if we can spike that. We'll be right back after this.
It's 20 after the hour, and we have to take a short break, if you know what I mean. Please support these sponsors who support Normal Show Live.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man, reefer man? If he said he swam to China, he would send you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
West Vienna, Malgo, Brook Dung Barrier, Herb is Medicine to Brook Dung Barrier, Boost the Economy and Brook Dung Barrier, It's helping other states, Brook Dung Barrier, Cannabis for legalized to Brook Dung Barrier, Join and speak your voice, Brook Dung Barrier, We gonna change the law, Brook Dung Barrier, We got to educate, Brook Dung Barrier. Yeah, this is Nayora, you know, bigging up USVI normal. Working to legalize cannabis, you know, for the whole of the Virgin Islands.
USVI Normal is a non-profit organization working to legalize cannabis for the use by the industries and responsible adults. Do your part. Join USVI Normal. Register to vote. Pass the word. Voice your opinion. You can change the law. Contact us for more information at 340-244-9179.
Hi in the Rockies. For the first time ever, High Times is hosting the Medical Cannabis Cup in the Mile High City, Denver, Colorado. Come to the High Times Medical Cannabis Cup. There'll be cultivation seminars with High Times editors Danny Danko and Nico Escondido, plus other experts and cannabis celebrities. Attend activism seminars with leaders of the medical marijuana movement, including advice on how to start your own cannabis business. Meet industry leaders in medical cultivation, hydroponics, smokable glassware, hemp products, dispensary supply, cannabis accessories, and more. Plus, medical cannabis cups will be awarded to the best indica, sativas, concentrates, and edibles entered by legally operating medical marijuana dispensaries and growing collectives. And don't forget Saturday night when the Medical Cannabis Cup will host the extravaganza with surprise musical guests. The High Times Medical Cannabis Cup, April 2nd and 3rd, 2011 at Exto in Denver, Colorado. Visit medcancup.com for details. Be part of the growing cannabis industry. Come to the High Times Medical Cannabis Cup in Denver.
Pop Pass Records.
It's time for your daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Today we bring you tunes for Groovin' Thursday, our salute to all the dopest beats and killer rhymes that we find in the best of rap, hip-hop, soul, R&B, and funk. Brought to you by the John Doe Radio Show in Denver, Colorado. Accurate and informative marijuana reform news and entertainment. Available on the THC Media Network and johndoeradio.com. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now here's some more great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tunes.
John Doe.
John Doe here with your Groovin' Thursday tune on Normal Show Live. Big thanks to the Normal Network for inviting us to be a big part of it. Live.normal.org is where you can check us out. 6 Pacific. Enjoy. Enjoy this tune, too, off the Roth EP, Asher Roth, one of our favorite artists here at the John Doe Radio Show. We got to meet him at KushCon, sit down and talk with him for a little, trying to secure an interview with him, so hopefully soon, within the next couple of months, he has a new album coming out, so hopefully when he does promotion for that, we can secure him on the John John Doe Radio Show and then maybe bring that interview to you on the network. Song's called Nothing You Can't Do. You heard it here on Normal Show Live. Make sure you go online. You can pick up this Roth EP for free. Also, a ton of other mixtape songs from Asher Roth. One of the most heady, thoughtful, kind, don't give a fark about anything dudes that I've ever met in my entire life. So enjoy. I am John Doe. Until we meet again later this evening, 6 Pacific, or you can download us at johndoeradio.com. Thank you, John. Thank you, Russ. Thank you, Carrie. Everybody that listens to us, y'all rock. See ya.
This life is all that matters. My time is all I have, and I came here to prove that there's nothing that you can do.
I'm so annoyed with this world that we live in. It's hard enough just for us to make a living. It's the same thing over and over, but we're only getting older and older. So we're told, get a job that's safe, cause dreams are too fake for us to chase. This is my life, if that's the case, can I decide to design my fate? If I wanna get high and wasted, then I will, and no one can say shit. I just hate that we're caught in this matrix. The money we make, the government takes it, then paves highways with no exits. Just more ways to get caught in traffic. So I ask them, please do tell, what would you do if you could not fail?
This life is all that matters. My time is all I have, and I came here to prove that there's nothing that you can do.
Yeah, for real, put the job on the shelf. Take a deep breath, spend time with yourself. Say hi, introduce you to you. If you couldn't lose, then what would you do? Whoop-dee-doo if you don't have a clue. None of us do when we first leave school. You're a fool if you think that you're straight, cause you put on a suit and a tie every day and show up to a job that you hate. The only reason you're there is cause you're getting paid. You waste your time, half awake for an employee discount and hourly wage. Locked in a cage like a mouse with a wheel. Patiently wait for an occasional meal. But without all the bills in the mail, what would you do if you could not fail?
This life is all that matters. My time is all I have, and I came here to prove that there's nothing that you can do.
All that you have, and it's sad some are wasting their health working a job for somebody else. But someday I want to be a dad with a son to play catch with and teach how to bat. So with that I decided to rap. Since then it ain't been that bad.
This life is all that matters. My time is all I have, and I came here to prove that there's nothing that you can't do. This life is all that matters. My time is all I have, and I came here to prove that there's nothing that you can't do. This life is all that matters. My time is all I have, and I came here to prove that there's nothing that you can't do. Can't do, can't do. There's nothing you can't do. There's nothing you can't do, can't do, can't do. There's nothing you can't do, can't do, can't do. There's nothing you can't do.
You want a copy of that song for your iPod? Check out the Daily Toker Tunes at the Stash blog by surfing to stash.normal.org and choosing Media, and then Toker Tunes from the main menu.
Starfish Designs, makers of the original Gandalf.
I'm Radical Russ, and when I want to relax, I always have my 17-inch long original Gandalf from Starfish Designs nearby. The hand-blown borosilicate glass is strong and easy to clean, and the design is sleek and sophisticated. Starfish designs are available from Bend, Oregon at a glass retailer near you. For locations, call 541-788-GLASS. That's 541-788-4527.
Also by Barry McCaffrey, General Barry McCaffrey, I should say, retired general, military analyst at NBC, and most importantly for this conversation, National Drug Policy, former National Drug Policy Director, very familiar with this conversation.
Normal Show Live, where the truth about marijuana gets more than a minute to speak.
General, I'm going to begin with you.
Everybody's got a habit, some good, some bad, to reach the comfort zone. Some of the people have all kinds of people around. Some people can't hang alone. Whatever it is, whatever you like, you're gonna make it through your afternoon. Everybody's...
One of the most disturbing elements of the war on marijuana is how it's made police the enemy of otherwise law-abiding cannabis consumers. Fortunately, one group of police officers knows firsthand the futility of the drug war and reaches out to the community and to current law enforcement to end our war on drugs through legalization. It's time now to speak to one such officer in our continuing look at law enforcement against prohibition.
Welcome back to everyone. Half past the hour, and we're joined now on the telephone by Michael J. Hansen, who's a speaker with Law Enforcement Against Prohibition and currently working on investigation of computer crime and forensics in, I believe, Las Vegas, Nevada. Did I get it right, Michael?
I am in Las Vegas, Nevada. That's correct. But the investigation of computer crime stayed in Los Angeles.
Oh, okay.
Las Vegas.
I was looking through your biography, and it was so extensive. Let me just run down some of these points, and maybe you can elaborate on some of these experiences. You were a Navy diver, a sheriff in Virginia Beach, a sheriff in Ramsey County, Minnesota, Minnesota National Guard, San Diego with the Border Patrol, and then the Los Angeles gig with the computer crime. That's a pretty varied law enforcement experience. Tell us a little bit about your background.
Well, yeah, you hit it on the head there. I started off as a Navy diver when I got out of the military, looking for a new career change, and got into law enforcement. Mm-hmm. Started the law enforcement career with the Virginia Beach Sheriff's Department, and a short time after I got there, my home is back in Minnesota. My dad lives back there, and so we decided to move back to Minnesota. And I joined the Ramsey County Sheriff's Department with the Lake and Trail Unit, utilizing my diving experience. It was a pretty sweet gig, working on boats, ATVs on the Mississippi River. It was a lot of fun. In about 1990, well, I believe it was 95, there was a big push from the Border Patrol, and I decided to give federal law enforcement a shot. Quite an extensive application process. It took me about a year and a half to get on board there.
Wow.
Joined the Border Patrol down in San Diego, way out in the East County, a little town called Campo, California, in the middle of nowhere. When I got there, there were 42 agents. And when I left there in late 1999, we had, I believe, 380, 390 agents that had arrived at that station.
Mm-hmm.
During the time when I was with the Border Patrol, it's a pretty dangerous job. You're out there by yourself. There's not a lot of protection. There's a lot of drug trafficking, as you can imagine, through the high desert of East County, San Diego. And in 1998, I was detailed to Indio, California, which is a little bit north. For those people that don't know Southern California, a little north of the border, they're kind of up by Palm Springs. And one night during a pursuit, a vehicle pursuit that turned into a foot pursuit, I ran off a cliff, about a 65-foot cliff out in the middle of the desert in pitch black. I just ran out of dirt.
Oh, man.
So, yeah, it was pretty bad. At the time, you know, it was... You go through the usual things. You get into, you know, physical therapy, and they're pumping you full of Vicodin and Flexeril and Lortabs, and it's just a horrible experience.
Yeah.
So that was kind of the predecessor to my current position with the legalization of, doing away with the war on drugs, because of the toxic nature of the medication that you're offered when you're injured.
Wow. So that was a major a change for you to, you know, just to experience the medical side of things. I mean, before that, what was your opinion of medical marijuana and the whole movement there in California?
Yeah. You know, I came out of high school. I went in the Navy. I'm a cop, you know, so I never did the college thing. I never had a lot of friends that were, you know, smoking weed or, you know, just hanging out. And, you know, you live by the policies that are set, you know, in front of you as a professional. And as a law enforcement agent, there's not a questioning of the policies that are put in front of you.
It's true.
That's the policy. That's your job. That's what you do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so during that whole time, you know, my thought was, you know, we're doing a good thing here, the war on drugs. You know, one night we got a load of about, boy, I think it was like 600 pounds of marijuana one night. And, you know, just it was absolute procedure. You know, you do this, 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 and this. This is what we're doing. This is what we're supposed to be doing. And it was a good thing, or so I thought at the time. Now, after that injury, you fast forward, and as you said, I started a private investigation firm in Los Angeles, and my specialty was computer crime. Computer forensics is the actual nomenclature for it. And it would be 2005, I injured myself again. You wouldn't think somebody would get injured working on computers, but moving some heavy gear around, I tore my arm up pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And started going through the same thing, you know, physical therapy, the drugs. And a friend of mine told me about the medical marijuana programs, the things that were involved. And, you know, I gave it a shot and the pain went away. You know, it was something that was dramatic for me. So it opened my eyes and I started doing more research. And, you know, over the last 5-6 years, I've really become a proponent of eliminating this war on drugs and legalizing, you know, marijuana specifically. But, you know, it just really was an eye-opening experience, to say the least.
Before your time in San Diego with that Border Patrol and, you know, the 600-pound bus that you're involved in and such, how about previous to that, when you're in Virginia Beach or in Minnesota, was the drug war something that you were in touch with on a daily basis in your patrols and your daily work there?
You know, sure. Virginia Beach, not so much, because most of the work I did was in the jail there. I worked, I guess you could say, yeah, because working in what they call booking and processing, the intake within the jail system there in the county, you know, you're running into guys that are coming in for simple possession, and it's mind-boggling. You know, fast forward to the Ramsey County days, and by the way, Ramsey County is St. Paul, just
right.
To give you
okay.
You know, for those that don't know, in the team that I worked with, it wasn't a big thing for what we were doing. But at the time, I was also an emergency medical technician, and a lot of times they would pull the EMTs to go on raids to make sure that, you know, they had medical help on site. So I was, you know, I was part of those kind of situations. And, you know, like I said before, you know, it just was the job. It's just what we did, and there was no thought process other than this is the mission and we need to complete the mission and everybody goes home safe.
Mm. Well, now, with all this sum total of experience, you know, dealing with the low-level offenders in the jails, tracking down the high-level offenders, you might say, with the 600 pounds, and now going through the other side to the use of medical marijuana, it seems like you're pretty convinced here marijuana needs to be legalized. And, of course, the position of LEAP is that all prohibition of drugs has to end in some way. Let's get into detail on that, though. I mean, how do you see a legalization structure happening? Obviously, the legalization of marijuana is much more popular than the idea of legalizing cocaine or heroin or methamphetamines. And what your experiences with those drugs and the people that might have been involved with those drugs, how do you reconcile that? Do you go along with that idea that all drugs should be legalized?
You know, my take on it is more... the bottom line is prohibition does not work.
Okay.
The way that we're, you know, moving through this particular culture, these particular quote unquote crimes, it just doesn't work. And we're bogging down the legal system. We're enforcing morality on people.
Sure.
There's a percentage of the population that's going to have an addictive nature. We know that.
Mm-hmm.
But by enforcing a moral decision, I just don't think it works, and that's my bottom line. And when it comes down to start looking at the figures, you start looking at the incarceration rates, you start looking at the impact on the minority communities and the low-income communities. I mean, I don't think that we have to, go too deep into that to have a really good idea that that's a huge problem in this country.
Absolutely. Let's go to your time with the Border Patrol. Of course, there's a lot of concern about immigration policies in this country and the situation with illegal immigration. And there's also the situation with drugs going back and forth across the border. How much do those two issues tie into each other?
Well, I don't think that they tie into each other very much at all, because they're completely separate entities. When we, at the time when I was there, when we would deal with, they called coyotes or human traffickers, people that would guide groups of people across the desert to some destination within the United States, that is one, one segment. The other side of it are the drug traffickers. Now, they don't, in my experience, there's never been a mix between the two. We never, would arrest 40, 50 people and find, 15 bags of marijuana in their backpacks. That just didn't happen. On the drug side, the smugglers, these guys that are carrying these drugs across, they're not the high level, narco traffickers. These are guys that are, that want to make $500-$600 for their family and get across the border, drop a duffel bag and get back across the border and put some money in their pocket. So we're still not making an impact on the narco traffickers. We're, and many times the people that we would, when and if we ever caught anybody that actually had the bags, because what they would do is dump the bags and disappear. They're not being prosecuted to the extent that, say, Ariana Felix cartel people would be there in the Tijuana area, or any of the narco traffickers from Mexico. Mm-hmm. So the people that are being arrested aren't even the people that are responsible for the product, either the supply or the distribution. All they're doing is carrying it and making a couple of bucks. So it just it really is. It's just not working.
Mm-hmm. Looking at Mexico, Juarez City, of course, had more murders last year than the entire state of California, over 900 more. Of course, Tijuana has been very violent right south of San Ysidro. How long do you think, if we continue with the drug war, the way we're fighting it, the Merida initiative, sending money and guns and advisors and tanks and such down to Mexico, how long do you see it before this violence is spilling over the border into our American cities?
Well, it's already spilling over the border.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I've been out of there for several years, but there was many times where we're taking gunfire from south of the border and you have no idea where it is, but you can hear it. There was a standing that Ariana Felix cartel, there was a standing hit out on any Border Patrol agent for quite a while. I don't know if that's still active, because it's not, I'm not in that group anymore,
sure.
So I'm not so concerned about it. But, it's already crossed over the border. There's no doubt.
Now, if we were to go, if President Obama tomorrow were to sign an executive order, reschedule or deschedule cannabis or even other drugs and take that business away from these cartels, would that lead to more of our resources in Border Patrol being, put to the immigration issue? Is our resources being taken away from the immigration issue to go after the drugs?
I would say, yes, because there are specific teams that are more focused on narcotic interdictions. From that standpoint, I do believe that will take place, because there will be more people that are involved in the actual enforcement of the immigration laws. When you carry that out into state, county, and local law enforcement, there's no doubt in my mind. I mean, you look at You turn on the TV, you know, you see, you know, SWAT team here, SWAT team there, SWAT team here. Well, you know, you're spending time, you know, breaking up a grow house that's got 40 plants in it. Well, okay, that's great. But, you know, the real criminals out there, the people that need to be in jail, which are the people that are a danger to society. And I haven't met somebody that is.
Oh, I'm sorry. We must have dropped that again. We're having some sort of problem with our Skype machine. Fortunately, it was here at the end of the segment. So we want to thank Michael Hansen from Leap for joining us here at Normal Show Live. And I apologize for the technical difficulties. Carrie, pass on my apology there if you're still in the chat with them. We'll come right back after this. We've got a little radical ranting on both drug rehab and what has Normal done for you lately. It's a double shot of rant right after this.
76% of Americans no longer support arresting and jailing marijuana smokers, and nearly as many support the medical patients having access to medical marijuana. And over 80% of our citizens now believe the war on drugs is an ineffective failure. So the question is, when will the government's misguided war on adult marijuana smokers finally end? When? Simple. When you and your like-minded friends, family, and co-workers get involved with an organization such as the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, also known as NORML. My name is Keith Stropp, and I founded the organization in 1970. Contact us at NORML, toll-free, 888-67-NORML, or by visiting the organization's up-to-date webpage at www.normal.org.
Really want to legalize marijuana? Prove it. Join NORML today at NORML.org, and your donation will help us spread the growing truth about cannabis. Free speech ain't free, you know.
Free the ganja tree, it's the healing of the nation. Free the Cali weed, good for meditation. Free the pot smokers, they're in a delight. Lighting up the chalice, they will keep no mollies.
Free the healing marijuana.
Come on, say,
free the marijuana.
Hear me say,
free the marijuana.
Como say,
free the marijuana.
Legalize it.
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
You want answers?
You have offended my family.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth.
And you have offended Shaolin Temple.
You can't handle the truth.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious, and don't call me Shirley.
Hoo-ah!
All right, folks, hold on tight, strap in. The fire hose of truth is coming at you. We got plenty of stuff to talk about here in the Radical Rant. We've had so many great guests and doing so much work with the NORML Network that there's been some stories I wanted to comment on, and let's just get right to it. First of all, a great report came out on Tuesday from the Drug Policy Alliance, and, you know, I've always been of the opinion that when you take someone who's a cannabis consumer, whose only problem with cannabis is they got caught with cannabis, and then you put them in a drug court where you say, all right, you can choose to go to rehab or you can choose to go to prison. I've always said that's a waste of time and really a kind of a gilded cage. Because, yeah, it's jail by another term. You're having to, your freedom's being taken away from you. You're on probation. You have to do UAs and so forth. So, yeah, it's better than prison. But it's still a punishment that is not needed, a rehab that is wasted. A majority of the tokers who end up in rehab, 57% of them, are forced there by the criminal justice system, either through an arrest or through a drug court or, you know, blown probation or whatever. And then a third, or over a third, 37% of the people who go to rehab for marijuana have not used marijuana in the month prior to going to rehab, and another 16% of them only used 1 to 3 times a month before going to rehab, you know, because marijuana is so addictive. But here in this report, this is amazing stuff that found that not only is this forced drug court rehab a gilded cage, it's also ineffective. This is from the report. At two briefings on Capitol Hill today, the Drug Policy Alliance released a groundbreaking new report, Drug Courts Are Not the Answer, toward a health-centered approach to drug use. You can find it, by the way, at drugpolicy.org/drugcourts, which finds that drug courts have not demonstrated cost savings, not reduced incarceration, and have not improved public safety. They leave many people worse off for trying and have actually made the criminal justice system more punitive toward addiction, not less. Now, this also comes on the heels of a release from the Justice Policy Institute that has released its own review of drug courts. This is called Addicted to Courts, How a Growing Dependence on Drug Courts Impacts People and Communities, which you can find at justicepolicy.org/drugcourts. So both of them, right? drugpolicy.org/drugcourts, justicepolicy.org/drugcourts. Very clever. And you can find both of those reports. Now, I encourage you to go log on, check those out. They're pretty amazing. Here's some of the key findings from these reports. Drug courts have not demonstrated cost savings, reduced incarceration, or improved public safety. Unscientific and poorly designed research has failed to take into account that drug courts often cherry pick people expected to do well, that many people end up in drug court because they are offered the option of jail or treatment for a petty drug law violation, including marijuana, and as a result, drug courts do not typically divert people from lengthy prison terms. Given drug courts' focus on low-level offenses, even positive results for individual participants translate into little public safety benefit to the community. Treatment in the community, whether voluntary or probation-supervised, often produces better results. Well, yeah! No wonder the Drug Czar's Office can say, and this is a quote from the Drug Czar's Office, "Research verifies that no other justice intervention can rival the dramatic results of those produced by drug courts." End quote. Well, yeah, because you're successfully rehabilitating a whole bunch of pot smokers who need no rehabilitation. Hey, what do you know? When we force pot smokers to rehab, randomly test their pee, keep them on probation, surprisingly few of them reoffend, because the rehab cured the terrible addiction that they never had in the first place. Another point that they make. Drug courts leave many people worse off for trying. The widespread use of incarceration for failing a drug test, missing an appointment, or being a knucklehead means that some participants end up serving more time behind bars than if they had not entered drug court. And some participants deemed failures may actually face longer sentences than those who did not enter drug court in the first place, often because they lost the opportunity to plead to a lesser charge. Even those not in drug court may be negatively affected by them, since drug courts have been associated with increased arrest and incarceration in some cases, because law enforcement and others believe people will get help if they're arrested. But drug courts' limited capacity and strict eligibility requirements mean that many of those additionally arrested end up conventionally sentenced. Now, in my job here with the normal, I read a ton of emails. I get people's life stories, some of the most tragic stories. And I'll tell you the one that I got from parents that emailed me, because they thought they could get help for their drug-using adult child by narking them out to the police. Tough love, they thought, but not too tough, because they figured, well, he'll go to drug court and the drug court will force him to go to the treatment that he needs and he'll avoid jail. Well, too bad for them. Their adult child also kept a legally owned shotgun at the house and a triple beam scale, so he didn't qualify for the drug court, and now he's doing 10 years in the pen. This is from the Drug Policy Alliance summary here. Drug courts are more punitive toward addiction, not less. Some people with serious drug problems respond to treatment in the drug court context, not the majority. The participants who stand the best chance of succeeding in drug courts are those without a drug problem, while those struggling with compulsive drug use are more likely to end up incarcerated. Look, folks, because here's the thing about people with drug problems. Let me just dish some science out on you. They are physiologically addicted to a drug, to a chemical. It rewires their brain. When presented with options like, stop doing that, or go to jail, they can't make the sensible choice. They can't look at that rationally and go, oh yeah, I should stop doing cocaine. I should stop doing meth. I should stop doing heroin. I don't want to go to jail, so I'll just stop. They cannot make that. That's what addiction is. Relapses are virtually guaranteed for anyone who's trying to quit a serious drug addiction, so the threat of prison time for failing to maintain sobriety works against maintaining that sobriety in the first place. They figure, well, I'm going to relapse anyway. I might as well not even try. People struggling with addiction sometimes make their greatest gains after a relapse. But in the drug court scenario, it's one strike and you're out. You have that relapse, it's back to prison. And here's the thing about people that smoke pot. Nearly none of us have any sort of problems resulting from our use of pot. Now, National Institutes of Drug Abuse say 9% of users are clinically dependent, but I would counter that these people are often folks that have bigger problems in their life that is leading them to depend on cannabis. But, you know, that's my personal opinion. Aside from its criminal prohibition, cannabis is a positive in our lives. It relaxes us. It heals some of us. It helps build social bonds. And most of all, it's not hurting you. All right, so there's your first rant. But we get a little double shot here because I got another little rant that I got to go off on here. And it's called, What Has Normal Done For You Lately? And I see these in blogs and people make comments sometimes. And here's the comment that I am responding to today. Normal hasn't accomplished anything since the disco era. They haven't done a damn thing in the last 30 years. Paul Armentano is the only good thing Normal has going. Aside from him, this movement wouldn't even notice if Normal had ceased existing. All right, look, I'll concur. Paul Armentano is an MVP all-star in marijuana law reform. You cannot find a better person educated on the science of marijuana. But to conclude that Paul is the only good thing Normal has going is to disparage the incredible work being done by hundreds of grassroots activists working in the Normal Chapter Network. For example, Chris Goldstein, Ann Davis, and Normal New Jersey, instrumental in bringing about negotiations with New Jersey lawmakers to get Governor Corzine's signature on the law making it the nation's 15th medical marijuana state. Derek Rosenzweig in Philly Normal uncovered and published research on Philadelphia's racial bias in marijuana enforcement, leading to a change in policy that ended arrests of low-level marijuana consumers in the city. Michigan Normal and Mascan Normal laid the groundwork for 2008's medical marijuana and decriminalization, respectively, in those two states, Michigan and Massachusetts, by passing numerous municipal measures in support of marijuana. Madeline Martinez in Oregon Normal led negotiations with lawmakers to set medical marijuana limits to 24 ounces and 24 plants, the highest statewide statutory limits in the nation, along with Washington State. Dale Gehringer, Bill Panzer, California Normal, helped co-author Prop 215 in California, worked for clarifications found in SB 420, worked with Assemblyman Amiano to produce the first legalization bill in decades, helped shepherd the latest California decrim measure to Schwarzenegger's desk, and are organizing with Prop 19's leaders for a new legalization measure in 2012. Candace Hawes in Orange County Normal held the nation's first medical marijuana conference specifically for seniors across the street from Disneyland. Mary McKenzie Crow, Arizona for Normal, Phoenix Normal, were the foot soldiers who gathered the signatures that got MPP's Arizona's Prop 203 on the ballot. Kelly Maddy, Joplin Normal, Dan Vietz, Missouri Normal, all worked in Missouri to pass lowest law enforcement and other municipal measures. Ben Mazel, Gary Stork, Madison Normal, all lobbied intensively for the Jackie Rickert Medical Marijuana Act, moving it farther along in the legislative process every single year. Colorado Normal, Mile High Normal have worked with SAFER on their initiatives, gathering signatures that led to Denver's legalization and other low priority initiatives. Isaiah Valdez and Idaho Normal are beginning the grassroots education and activism in one of the most anti-marijuana states in the nation. The state currently has a medical marijuana bill in the legislature, and the group is following it up with a citizens initiative. John and Heather Masterson in Montana Normal, battling to mitigate the perception of abuse of medical marijuana created by unethical ganjapreneurs, and most recently, providing live coverage of DEA raids in Montana. Then, there are the hundreds of attorneys who make up the Normal Legal Committee who have donated thousands of hours of pro bono time, helping average cannabis consumers to avoid jail and retain voting rights. Also working on new laws. For example, Jeff Blackburn, who kept an AIDS patient out of a Texas prison with an affirmative defense that a jury agreed with in only 11 minutes of deliberation. The patient's original public defender only offered a plea deal that would have meant 6 months of drug testing that would have left that patient without his medicine wasting away. Doug Hyatt, who fought for the life of a Hep C patient named Tim Guerin, who was denied a liver transplant because his legal medical marijuana use in Washington State made him a drug addict in the eyes of the hospital. Hyatt is now behind the Sensible Washington effort to fully legalize by citizen initiative. And let's not forget the national staff, like me, like the volunteers that bring this show to you every single day, bringing you the news and the information and the interviews to help educate you in this fight, who constantly are educating, advocating, interviewing, debating, advertising, litigating, and lobbying, and moving this conversation forward. And this is just at the top of my head since about 2007 when I got involved with Normal. Now, as far as I'm concerned, I don't care what organization you want to get involved with. I don't care what acronym you want to have behind your name. To me, it's like the Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, and Coast Guard. What a great place to start. Sure, we tease each other. Sure, we've got some brother-sister rivalries, some internecine battles, some grudges that we hold. But so does the Navy and the Marines, for God's sake. You ever been around a bunch of sailors and leathernecks before? How about the Air Force and the Army? I mean, they've got some grudges that have been going on for a long time. But for me, what's important about this is that we're all fighting for an end of prohibition. However, there are some important differences. DPA is about drug policy. They think drug prohibition sucks. MPP is about marijuana policy. They think marijuana prohibition sucks. SAFER is about a choice. They think alcohol sucks compared to marijuana. ASA is about medical marijuana, but they're silent on healthy people like me. And LEAP is about cops expressing the drug war failure. They think prohibition sucks. But NORMAL, out of all the groups, is the one that doesn't just think marijuana prohibition sucks, but that cannabis use is a positive. We're not just anti-prohibition, we're pro-marijuana. And that's what NORMAL's been doing for you for the past 30 years. We are the grassroots. Thanks for joining us here. For Cannabis Carrie and Ganja John and Coleco the intern, I'm Radical Russ. We'll talk more about this in Hour 2, Toker Talk Radio. For those of you on the podcast, thanks for listening. And until next time, take care of each other, Tokers.
This is NORMAL Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
You grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.